Welcome to a special edition of Radio in Vivo here on WCOM. This is Ernie Hood. On September 21st, 2010, I had the honor of hosting a Science Cafe event at Irregardless in Raleigh, sponsored by the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences and co-sponsored by UNCTV and Blueprint America. We broadcast the event live on WCOM, but I wanted to share it with everyone because the comments made by the speaker that evening, urban designer Dan Douglas, were so absorbing and important. So here we go to Radio in Vivo and the Science Cafe.
Welcome, everybody, and welcome to WCOM. This is a live version of the show I do on WCOM, which is called Radio in Vivo, Your Link to the Triangle Science Community. And it airs Wednesday mornings at 11 o'clock. The radio station is a low-power station, so we actually only air in Carrboro, but we do stream on WCOMFM.org. So it's actually worldwide, and we invite you to take a listen and check out the community radio station that's really quite a great station. And I need to thank my sponsors, the National Evolutionary Synthesis Center and Moorhead Planetarium and Science Center and the North Carolina Association for Biomedical Research. And given that this is a kind of multidisciplinary evening tonight, I have several other thank yous to get out of the way. Not least among them, we want to thank UNCTV, who is a co-sponsor of this event, as part of their Blueprint America project. And Blueprint America, yeah, absolutely. UNCTV is doing some wonderful things in the community, and there's going to be a lot more to come in the months to come, so keep an eye out for some of those activities with Quest as well, is another program that we're working on. And Jen Jones and Kathy Dobbins are going to be live tweeting for us tonight, so we're going to be bringing questions in from Twitter. And I guess they're not actually tweeting. They'll be down-tweeting, or I don't know what the terminology is. Okay. And I also have to thank my colleagues from WCOM, Dr. David Bellin, who is engineering tonight, and Bob Burtman is our DJ back at the station, who kindly gave up his usual program to anchor for us at the station. And last but not least, have to give a quick shout-out to a group that I am a member of called Science Communicators of North Carolina. Yay! And I think several of our members are here tonight, and we appreciate it. And if anyone is interested in joining the group, it's a wonderful organization. You can see me, and we will plug in. You just have to go on the website and sign up to be a member, and that's all there is to it. As you know, tonight's Science Cafe is titled Growth in North Carolina, Smart or Not Smart. And that is an issue that is really going to affect each and every one of us in the months and years to come. And we do have a special guest tonight who is an expert in these matters. Mr. Dan Douglas is Director of Urban Planning and Design at Kling Stubbins Architects. Prior to joining Kling Stubbins, he was Director of Raleigh's Urban Design Center for 7 years. And you could say Dan is one of the visionaries behind the remarkable renaissance taking place here in downtown Raleigh. He has quite a remarkable vision for the future of the City of Oaks, which we will hear all about. And among other projects, he is currently working on a new development framework and investment strategy for downtown Chapel Hill. So we will hear about that as well. And so he is going to start us out tonight with an overview of his work and his philosophies. So ladies and gentlemen, please give a warm Science Cafe welcome to Dan Douglas.
You want to be on now? Yeah. Thank you very much. I'll start off tonight by asking, what is smart growth? And as a planner working in this profession for generations, I had a rough definition of it, but I'm going to read the Wikipedia version. So smart growth is an urban planning and transportation theory that concentrates growth in the center of a city to avoid sprawl. and it advocates compact, transit-oriented, walkable, bicycle-friendly land uses, including neighborhood schools, complete streets, mixed-use development with a range of housing choices. Smart growth values long-range decision-making, regional considerations of sustainability over a short-term focus. Its goals are to achieve a unique sense of community and place, expand transportation, employment, and housing options, and equitably distribute the costs and benefits of development, preserve and enhance natural and cultural resources, and promote public health. And so these are the goals of the smart growth planning paradigm, and I'm going to cover first some of the issues that I think directly affect it, and then talk a little bit about an idea I had for downtown Raleigh that I think is in line with the smart growth theory. First of all, one of the big impacts I think that we're all going to confront more and more in the coming years is climate change. And U.S. carbon dioxide emissions have increased the fastest in what region of the country, do you think? The Southeast, our region. Up over 31% from 90 to 2004. Nationally, we were only up 18%, so we're almost double the national average in terms of carbon dioxide emissions. And in the Southeast, what state do you think is increasing the fastest? Not North Carolina, but close. We're number three. First is Arizona, second Florida, and third is North Carolina, up 36% in the same time frame from 90 to 2004. If we were a country, if North Carolina was a country, we'd be the 28th worst emitter of carbon dioxide. So when you look around and say, who's causing this global warming? It's us. You know, we're one of the worst. And so from that standpoint, I would say we haven't been that smart over the last 15 years in how we grow and get our energy here in North Carolina. One of the other big sort of issues on the horizon is peak oil. And peak oil is this theory that, there's only so much oil in the ground and there's only so much that can be pumped out and eventually will run out. There's lots of debate about it, whether it's real or not real, or whether we'll adapt with more efficient cars or planes and never reach the peak. I can tell you, I grew up in north central Pennsylvania where oil was first discovered. And in that region, we hit peak oil in about 1950. We pumped it all out, and basically the economy died. My little town went from having more millionaires per capita than any other city in Pennsylvania to one of the poorest cities in Pennsylvania in a span of about 20 years. So they're saying sometime between 2010 and today and 2020, I have a projection here of a whole bunch of different oil companies and the energy associations and research institutes, and they basically all agree that sometime in the next 10 years, we're going to reach the peak. And from that point on, demand will increase and the supply will drop. And what do you think that means? That's right. By 2020, just when we think oil will peak, China and India will have added 400 million new cars. 400 million. We are going to look back on days when it was $4 a gallon longingly, two summers back when it shot up. There's a guy named Charles T. Maxwell they call him the Dean of Energy Analysts at the Wheaton Company. He advises Bank of America and GE and all these big corporations, and he says, when we come out of this economy that we're in, the sort of depressed economy, within a few years of starting to come back out, he's predicting U.S. gasoline prices may hit somewhere between $12 and $15 a gallon. $12 and $15. And so how will that affect places like the Research Triangle Park that is built on the premise that people can commute from anywhere to get there? The day of cheap labor and cheap transportation, I think, is about going to come to an end. And in Raleigh, the 10 most compact metropolitan areas in the United States, the 10 cities that are the most compact, the average person drives about 21 miles a day. This is called VMT, vehicle miles traveled. And the 10 most sprawling cities in the United States, that average is about 27 miles a day. What do you think it is in the triangle? Yeah, 31. We're the worst of the worst. We drive more per day in this region than almost any other city in the country. That's going to be a problem. Some of the other big trends, I think, are the emergence of mega regions. And these are, people are saying it's no longer countries and states competing for economic development. It's really big mega regions. The one that's most commonly known here in the United States is the corridor from Boston to Washington, D.C. You know, basically it's one long city along that entire corridor. We are located at the northern edge of what's called the Piedmont Atlantic mega region, and it stretches from here to Atlanta. I sometimes call it Rawlantingham. It's going to end up being like it is from Boston to D.C., and you can start to see it. You know, I've lived in the South now near Atlanta for, in the South for 20 years, first in Atlanta, then Charlotte, now Raleigh. And, you know, making that drive a lot, and I'm sure all of you have made it, you can start to see where the cities are getting closer and closer, and there's not so much farmland between the cities anymore. And pretty soon it's going to be one long city. And so that's a big factor, I think, that's going to influence the way we travel and how we develop. And so this region is no longer, you know, it's not North Carolina competing with South Carolina. It's the Piedmont Atlantic mega region competing with the Zurich mega region or the Shanghai mega region in China. And really our planning paradigm and our way of regulating development is not equipped to deal with that. It's not equipped to deal with changes across state borders or even outside municipal boundaries. So we're going to have to come up with a new set of rules on how we're going to grow in these regions. You know, population trends, the demographic trends in the United States are going to influence how we grow as well. We're getting browner and grayer. More residents are coming from outside the country. Right now, the foreign population is about 12%. In 2050, it's predicted to be almost 20, foreign-born population. And right now, we're about 67% white. In 2050, about 47%. Right now, 18 to 64 the 65 and over demographic is about 12%. And in 2050, it's going to be about 19%. So all these changes, they're going to lead to smaller housing sizes, smaller family sizes, different ways to get around as people from foreign countries have trouble driving or understanding our language. And as we get older and our eyes get worse, we'll also have trouble driving. So transit and rail is going to become increasingly important. In fact, I'd say we're a nation in training. For the first time in 50 years, in 2006, we went over 10.1 billion trips on mass transit. For the first time in 50 years, way back where we were in 1960. Light rail has the fastest growth rate of all the types of transit. Ridership is up about 6% a year because more systems are coming online and more people are finding the systems more convenient to get to work or wherever they're going. Even in North Carolina, the Piedmont. Has anybody taken the Piedmont train to Charlotte, from Raleigh to Charlotte? Ridership is up 7% year over year on that train. So people that tell you trains won't work in North Carolina, nobody will ride them. Last year they had 700,000 people ride that train. So it's growing faster and faster. They added midday service this year, and pretty soon they'll add two more trips back and forth. I would argue that that's going to become sort of de facto commuter rail for the entire state. We're really lucky. North Carolina owns the corridor from Morehead City to Charlotte. It's about 300 and some odd miles long. It's 200 feet wide. And we own it. The citizens of North Carolina own it. The North Carolina Railroad is the corporation, and it has only one shareholder, the state of North Carolina. And so in most states, that corridor is owned by CSX or Norfolk Southern or one of the big freight corridors, and you have to ask permission to put passenger trains on it. Here, we own the corridor, and so the passenger or the freight guys have to ask us permission. So we have a lot of flexibility. Only two states, us and Alaska, own their own railroad. And that is going to position us really well going forward. And the NCDOT Rail Division is acquiring additional right-of-way. Eventually, you'll be able to take a train from Wilmington all the way to Asheville or Charlotte or Raleigh. And unfortunately, you can't see the map, but if you looked at the expansion map of the rail system in the United States, North Carolina is this real dense. There's lots of lines there because we'll be able to expand our network better than any other state, and that's going to position us really well for the future growth when gas, if it does, gets to $12 or $15 dollars a gallon. You'll have a lot of choices for travel in North Carolina that you won't have in Georgia or Alabama or California. So I'd say that's a real smart thing that our leaders did, you know, many, many years ago in the 1800s. Urban redevelopment is an enormous opportunity to reduce land consumption. As the U.S. population grows towards 400 million in 2040, a researcher at Virginia Tech estimates that we'll require about 90 million new or replaced homes and 190 billion square feet of office, institution, retail. If that's true, then two-thirds of the development on the ground in 2040 has not been built yet. So we have a real opportunity as a growing country to shift this paradigm and do it in a different way, and especially a big opportunity here in the Triangle because we're growing so fast. About 60% of the housing stock that we have here was built only after 1980. You know, the region is growing by about 30,000 people a year. They say about 100 people a day move to Wake County. That's an enormous opportunity to get it right moving forward. It's more difficult to sort of redo what's already been done, but going forward we have a tremendous opportunity to get it right. In North Carolina, we consume about 277 acres of farmland and forest a day, over 100,000 acres a year. 1 million acres of forest land has been chopped down since 1990. It's probably a greater number now. This is from, I think, 2006, this information. 2.8 million acres of crop and forest land has disappeared in the last 20 years. So redeveloping within your boundary is how you can increase density and be more efficient. What city do you think of the major? There's about, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There's 8 major cities in North Carolina listed on this chart I have. Which city do you think is the densest, the most dense, the most housing units per acre? Charlotte. It surprised me. It's Jacksonville. Jacksonville, North Carolina, is about 3.26 housing units per acre. The least dense is Hickory, Morganton. Here's the bad news, though. The population change, let's just look at Raleigh. The population change between 1982 and 1997, we grew by about 60%. But the urban area change, the amount of land we consume, grew by 94%. That's not really one of the bad ones. I mean, Asheville grew by about 20%, but the land it consumed grew by 87%. So the lots are getting bigger, more spread out, harder to serve with infrastructure, harder to serve with transit, all of those things. We're getting, as a state, less dense, not more dense. And what we need to do is get more dense. So all of these things are sort of influencing the way I think about how we should develop going forward. One of the things I looked at, there was a bit of a write-up about it in the local Independent, so if you need the graphics and some further definition, you can find it online by searching my name at the Independent. In 2030, the downtown land use plan for Raleigh estimates that there'll be 30,000 people living here in the downtown. When I got here in 1990 and started working on downtown, there were 600. Today, there's about 3,000. So just in the last 10 years, we've, whatever the math is, 500% increase. But we need to do a lot more. So there'll be 30,000 new residents predicted, about 20,000 new jobs, 5 new rail connections, hopefully, in 2030. We'll have light rail, commuter rail, Southeast High-Speed Rail, the North Carolina Rail, Amtrak. There's always and has been talk about moving the arena back downtown. Hopefully there'll be a technology museum, the Natural Science Museum, the Contemporary Art Museum is under construction, the African American Cultural Museum. Wake Tech is talking about building a campus in downtown. And NC State is increasingly moving parts of its campus into the downtown because the younger folks, they really value sort of downtown lifestyle, downtown, it's where the action is, you know, they really want to be there. The design school already has a studio downtown. The art department is moving part of its program to CAM, I think. So NC State is responding. So if you look at all those numbers, right, the residents, the jobs, the seating, you know, 20,000-seat arena, 5,000-seat festival site, maybe there'll be 10,000 new college students, 5,000 hotel rooms. That's about 80,000 parking spaces if you served each one of those uses individually. Before I do the calculation, how many parking spaces do you think are in downtown Raleigh today? 15,000, about 37,000. More than there are in downtown San Francisco. About the same as in downtown Chicago. Each one of those spaces costs about $20,000 to $25,000 for an above ground poured in place parking space. So if you look up all these new demands I just listed, it's about 80,000 new spaces at $25,000 a space. It's $2.4 billion we could spend on parking between now and 2030. I think there's a better way. I think we could take that money and spend it on a regional transit system and build about a third of that parking. We should never build another parking deck probably ever in downtown Raleigh. I think we have enough parking to ride us through till 2030, 2050. Today, even the most heavily used deck is still about only 70% occupied during the peak hours between 9 and 5. We're way, way, way overparked. So what I decided to do was look and think, where is downtown likely to grow? And if we talk about the regional transit system and light rail, you would think it's going to be the west side of downtown where we are today, where the transit system is. I asked my GIS guy, which is GIS is a technical land planning software that can tell you a lot about individual properties. And I asked him, light up all the property on the west side of downtown that's owned by the City of Raleigh, the Housing Authority, Wake County, or the State of North Carolina, so all levels of government, our major transportation providers, the North Carolina Railroad, Norfolk Southern Railroad, Triangle Transit, Greyhound, and the two utilities, Progress Energy and PSNC Gas. And what we found was just on the west side of downtown, there's 120 acres of land that are owned by these 10 entities that all have, as part of their charge, economic development. And I started thinking about what would happen if instead of each of these 10 entities planning the redevelopment of their property on their own for the highest and best return to their own budget and not together, what would happen if we took that 120 acres and planned it together? How could we shift the paradigm of what downtown Raleigh is today? So that's what I wrote this long paper about. And it's mostly covered in the Independent, so you can get a lot of that information there. But what if we did that land? You know, if you think about what makes this region great, obviously, you know, the Research Triangle Park is a big driver of who we are. A lot of folks work there. It's a big part of our economy. It's about 40,000, 35,000 employees out there. And that's great. That's a great paradigm from the 50s and 60s. You know, suburban park, you can't see any of the buildings. I don't know about you guys, but when my brother and sister come down here, they say, oh, we want to see Research Triangle Park. We want to see this great park. And I said, well, I'm happy to take you there, but all you're going to see is a guard shack and trees. You're not going to see really any buildings or any activity going on out there. And Research Triangle Park, I think, understood that they're operating under the old paradigm. They're doing a new master plan right now on how to redevelop the park in a more urban fashion, I think, and connect it up with transit. And it's great. So if you're a science and technology company, you come to the region, you say, okay, I want to be an ex-urban. I want to be out in the country. Wonderful. We have sites for you at Research Triangle Park. Or you might say, well, I'd rather be near a campus. I really value the interaction with the students and all of that. Okay, wonderful. We're building Carolina North at UNC, and we have Centennial Campus, you know, right over the hill. And then if you say, well, I want to be in a downtown, the conversation stops. Because I think for years, downtown Raleigh and to some extent downtown Durham and Chapel Hill as well, and even Cary, we've been so respectful of the park that we've never wanted to compete with it. We've never wanted to create a downtown that can compete with the Research Triangle Park. And I'm telling you, most of the new entities and new corporations, you know, they want the 20-something employee, and that employee doesn't want to work in the park. If you go to Boston, Providence, Chicago, any city in Europe, their research parks aren't parks. They're urban experiences where the labs, you know, BioSquare in Boston, 22 Ampersand, the Innovation District in Barcelona, all these countries are putting those parks in the heart of downtown. So that was the genesis of this idea. What if we took that 120 acres and made an in-town research park? What type of infrastructure would they want? You know, what type of infrastructure would attract those companies? And I started asking folks in regional economic development, folks in the park. And it turns out an uninterruptible power supply is a big deal, that it's a smooth, like, 120 hertz. You know, it doesn't waver. And so that led me to think about this idea of what if we built a cogeneration facility where we generated our own energy and supplied the park and all of downtown. Minneapolis does it. It's called combined heat and power. So you generate electricity with a gas turbine, and then the exhaust of the turbine is real hot, so you use it to heat the water, to heat the buildings, or through this thing called reverse osmosis, you can also use the hot air to cool buildings. And so that would make downtown real efficient and attract, I think, some of these companies to downtown. And for years, when I worked for the city of Raleigh, people would say, you know, we want a lake downtown like Oakland has. We want a river walk like San Antonio has. We want blah, blah, blah like whoever has. And I just got so frustrated because I think Raleigh has something really unique that not very many cities have, and we should expand that. And that's the five original squares that the city was laid out on. You know, I have the Capitol in the center, Moore and Nash Square to the south, the state built on Caswell Square in the northwest corner. And I don't know how many people know this story, but after Sherman stayed in the governor's mansion, it was originally where the Performing Arts Center was. So the governor had to walk up Fayetteville Street to get to the legislature and interact with the people. It was this big democratic symbolism. But after Sherman stayed there in the 1860s, no other governor would stay there. And that's when they moved the governor's mansion to Burke Square and took one of the other four squares. So I think we ought to reclaim all those squares and, in fact, build 9 new ones. And the squares would be basically green spaces with parking underneath, and the parking would serve all the buildings around it, and then all of the existing above-ground parking decks we could see as redevelopment sites. So all the city decks that are prominently placed around the downtown core, we could redevelop and use these squares, and each square would have a public purpose in it, like a museum of technology or the Wake Tech, or the portions of the Wake Tech campus or the African American Cultural Center, or be directly adjacent to the new arena. And there's a diagram that explains all this. But, I think that would make us unique. We'd have these squares that no one else has. I think we're going to build a new Union Station just about 2 blocks from here where all the trains come into downtown. We're going to be the gateway to the new South. The high-speed rail plan for the nation has one train coming from Washington, D.C. to Raleigh, and then it splits. And one goes down to Florida, and one goes basically to New Orleans. And so in that train station is where a lot of people are going to have to change trains, and maybe some will drive there to take the train north or south. But this is one of the few mid-sized cities. I mean, Chicago has a lot coming in, New York. But in terms of cities our size, we're one of the few where multiple high-speed rail trains will come in. And when high-speed comes, the short hop plane trip disappears. France has a pretty expanded high speed rail network, and now nobody flies on a flight less than about 400 miles. Everybody takes the train, and that frees up a lot of capacity in the French airports because now they just have to have the long haul flights. And so I think that's going to do the same here for us in Raleigh. So the plan is to develop this 120 acres with new squares, a high-tech research park in town, new central train station, to bring the arena back downtown and put it on one of the squares, a new Wake Tech campus adjacent to one of the squares, and then a new circulation network. And we've already identified 3 of them. They're called Green Streets. And in this case, they're a street where the needs of the car come last. The needs of the bicyclist, the pedestrian, and the environment come first, and the car comes last. In Raleigh, it's Jones Street, Cabarrus Street, and Boylan Avenue here. And over time, you'll start to see bike lanes, LED lights, pavement that's permeable, or that the water off the street runs through a filter before it goes into the Pigeon House Creek. You know, heading north up Capitol Boulevard is Pigeon House Creek, and it's the most polluted creek in North Carolina, heading north out of our downtown. And if we could make these changes, it'd get a lot nicer. Then we'd have the light rail streetcar connection between Centennial Campus, revitalized Dorothea Dix in this downtown research park. Capitol Boulevard would be gridded and connected. Pigeon House Creek would be daylighted and cleaned up, and you'd have a new in-town mixed-use, multi-purpose research park. And we, because all the land is basically publicly owned or railroad-owned, we could require that any housing on there is 20% affordable. This is common practice in European countries. I mean, I think one of the big reasons that we have a lot of difficulty and a lot of issues with diversity and busing in the Wake school system is because we don't have a diverse population in terms of where it lives. There's concentrations of wealth and poverty, and that's what creates this big issue. If we had required affordable housing decades ago, we wouldn't have to bus kids anywhere. So this is something I think is going to, I hope, develop in the near future. Now, I know everyone's going to say, well, how do you pay for it? You know, how do you pay for this big idea? Well, the beautiful part of that 120 acres of land, because it's owned by the government, its value is what? Zero for tax purposes. Zero. So when it redevelops, you can use a tool called tax increment financing, which is basically you capture the value of the redevelopment on that property and use that new tax to pay for the infrastructure to serve it. And I did a calculation that says this 120 acres, if developed at about the same density as downtown Raleigh has developed over the last 10 years, would generate about $75 million a year in new tax revenue that could be used to pay for the streetcar, the squares, the parking, all of the things I mentioned earlier. So it doesn't have to cost us, the taxpayer, a tremendous amount of money. You let the development pay for itself. And it's much more difficult to do if the government doesn't own the land, because that tax increment is much smaller. If it's already paying taxes, the increment between pre- and post-development is small. But when it's on government land, it goes from zero, and you can capture 100% of that development and use that money to pay off the debt service on all the infrastructure. And so that's sort of the future that I think... That I think Raleigh could achieve, and I've seen it replicated in many cities, not many in North Carolina. There's lots of cities that have eco districts where they're trying to be green, and there's lots of cities that have in-town research parks, but I have yet to see one in North America that combines both, that says we're going to be a green district, we're going to be affordable, and we're going to be high-tech research. And we could carve out a place in the sort of paradigm of North American cities that no one else has. And we're already set up to do it, because all the research companies and drug companies and high-tech companies, they already look at us now already. All we have to do is give them another option, an option that's smart and an option that helps us grow in a more sustainable way. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. That was great. And I'm going to interview Dan for just a little bit, and then we'll turn it all over to you. Dan, first of all, welcome to Radio In Vivo on WCOM.
Thanks for having me.
The vision you describe is great, and I don't think anyone here would disagree with anything you have said up to this point. But how are you going to convince people in this environment to give up their precious automobiles, their SUVs, et cetera, and actually take public transportation such as you described? North Raleigh would be a wasteland if we did that.
Yeah, well, I don't think... two things. One, I'm not advocating that everybody take public transportation for every trip. It's a choice that we currently don't have. Mm-hmm. And so I think when you offer people the choice, research has shown about 30% of the people will take that option. That's one way. Mm-hmm. Another way is... there's a program that we have yet to adopt here in Raleigh, but it's pretty popular in California. It's called Parking Cash Out. Who here has a subsidized parking space at work? Nobody. Nobody. Wow, that's unusual. Well, typically in downtown Raleigh, if you work, let's say, for Progress Energy, they're going to give you $100 a month for your parking space, but for the space. So the only way to take advantage of that program is to drive to work alone. Then you get the $100. If you change the paradigm and say, we're not going to subsidize the space, we're going to subsidize your commute to work. We're going to give you $100 and you decide how to spend it. We're going to put the market into this decision. Overnight, 15% of the people figure out a different way to come to work. Overnight. They either take the bus or they ride with a neighbor and they pocket the difference. And the other thing I would say that's going to change is what I said earlier. When those 400 million cars come on the road in China and India, $7, $8, $10 gasoline is going to change the way people drive, and I won't have to do it for them. They'll do it on their own.
Yeah, absolutely. We just had SparkCon Festival here in Raleigh, and I came across a quote that from a presentation you made last year that I wanted to kind of get you to elaborate on a little bit.
Sure.
You said to SparkCon last year, if we are the smartest, most creative community in the country, we need to start acting like it.
That's right.
Now, what exactly did you mean by that?
Well,
and
what
do
I
you
meant,
see any signs that it's happening?
Yeah, what I meant was you see a lot of the rankings. Everybody reads the rankings. You know, Raleigh has more, bachelor and master's degrees per capita than almost any city in the country. Richard, Florida is rated as the sixth most creative city in the United States, rather. And what I meant was, if we're that smart and we're that creative, we need to come up with different solutions to these problems that everyone is confronting, and we need to act on it. And I think we have. I think we have recently. I mean, transit is getting the TTA transit system is back now and getting additional interest in replanning its routes. The new comprehensive plan that was adopted last year is about focusing growth in 6 or 8 areas. 40% of the new population we want to accommodate in 6 or 8 areas within the city. So that's putting a lot of people along the transit stops so that it'll be compact, walkable areas, and they'll be more attuned to using transit. And we're getting a lot smarter about how we deal with our waste, I think. Recycling, we're going to the big rollout cans where all of that waste will be recycled. Now, you don't have to sort it anymore. Just in the last year, they went from taking, cans and bottles to now cans, bottles, paper, cardboard, 6 different kinds of plastic, all those different things. And so I think we're getting a lot smarter. I also think that the city of Raleigh has done a tremendous amount of work in the field of sustainability. We have 2 solar farms now that are on Raleigh land that are generating solar electricity for the city. We're getting ready to create a small little hydro project up on Falls River. We're one of the Falls Dam. We're one of the first LED cities in the country and one of the first Project Get Ready cities, which is putting in 200 charging stations for all electric cars. So in many ways, just in the last year or two, Raleigh has moved from kind of a slow adopter to being right on the cutting edge of adopting these new technologies.
Oh, that's great to hear. And it's good to hear the optimism you're espousing. What about Durham, Dan? What's your take on... Downtown is certainly happening there.
Yeah, no question. And I'm all for the competition of ideas and investment, and I think it's great that Durham is doing downtown. Its downtown is doing well. Certainly American Tobacco was a huge project, the largest historic tax credit project in North Carolina's history. That redevelopment, I think, has provided a lot of energy. DPAC coming online, it's hurt us a little bit at the Progress Energy Center, but I'm happy for Durham. And I think, that's one of the great strengths of our region is, in Charlotte, if you want to do something, you basically have one choice. I'm going to go to downtown Charlotte or in any of the big mononuclear cities where there's one city center. But here where there's many, you have multiple choices. You could go up and see a show at Memorial in Chapel Hill, or you could go to DPAC, or you could go to Progress Energy, and so I think each town has its own flavor, each town has its own way of doing things, each town is a bit unique, and I want all of them to succeed because I think as everyone does better, as a region we do better.
Absolutely. It's interesting the point you made about mega cities.
Mm-hmm.
I've lived here since 1976, so I have seen enormous growth, obviously. Mm-hmm. And just like you say, the three major cities, and certainly with Cary blended in now as well as a major city mm-hmm. in its own right, have grown together tremendously, so there's almost not even a break in between any mm-hmm. of them anymore. Do you see a vision for the triangle as a small megacity, if you will?
Well, I don't know if I'd call it a small megacity, but I think it's going to be a larger metropolitan area that has these different flavors, and I think it's going to grow. You know, Raleigh is predicted to be the Triangle region, and Raleigh is predicted to be the fastest growing city of the United States in the next 10 years. So we're going to go from where we are today, I think about 375,000, to somewhere north of 500,000 just in the next 10 years. And so, you know, I think they do grow together and they do get kind of blended a little bit, but each city has its own, you know, sort of way of looking at things and its own elements that it touts, that it's proud of, and certainly each of the downtowns is different. But I think, yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think we will grow together and that we will develop as a sort of emerging, I wouldn't say mega city. I mean, we're a long way from some of the cities over in the Far East that are, you know, 20 million people. But
sure.
But we're going to be an emerging city and a power, I think, in the competition for economic development and for new jobs and new technologies.
Well, maybe the unique character of the cities in the Triangle really is part of our strength going forward.
I sure hope it is. I'd hate to lose that unique character.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dan, thank you very much. And we're ready to open it up for questions from all of you. We've got plenty of time left, so fire away. I'll come to you or Katie on the other side here. If you have a question, raise your hand and we'll come to you.
Let's talk about politics for a second. That there's a lot of very reasonable ideas that get trotted forth, but when it comes to the politicians and the voters, they don't quite see it the same way. What do you think is the political momentum for these ideas?
Well, that's a good question. You know, politics by its very nature is sort of designed to deliver mediocrity. Right, it's all about compromise. It's all about making sure every special interest gets some part of what satisfies them. But I would say, you know, this is the simplest definition I can think of for what planning is and what I've spent my career working on. You know, planning is really the organization of hope. It's where do you want to be and what type of community do you hope for 20 years from now? And I think if a community lays out a strong vision that's driven by the grassroots, you know, public participation, talking to everybody, getting everyone in a room and getting them to understand that there are compromises that have to be made. Not everyone can get everything they want, but trying to figure out what's in the best interest of the community and building that grassroots support, by the time you get to the politicians, they're eager to vote for it. 9 times out of 10, because they know it has the support of the community. And that is what I think, frankly, worked so well in downtown Raleigh. The Livable Streets Plan, we spent 9 months meeting with literally thousands of citizens and stakeholders in downtown, asking them, what is it that you want us to do to bring downtown back? And because it had such broad support, the council and county commission, I mean, they made some tough decisions, tearing down the old convention center, spending all that money to reopen Fayetteville Street when nobody thought it would work, when people had said for decades, you know, just write downtown off. Nobody wants to go there. It's dark and dingy and full of crime and all the misperceptions that people had. And I think once that the community saw this, the city was willing to make investments in support of this new plan, people just came out of the woodwork. I mean, developers, all the new buildings you see in downtown except for one were developed by local folks. So I think the way you overcome politics and division is by building a consensus, a grassroots consensus about what are the most important things to do and focus on those.
The figures that you gave regarding our growing population are staggering and horrifying. This is a comment. Maybe what we should be paying attention to is how to reproduce less. That's what we really should be paying attention. That's one thing. But then I have a question. You said that each city has its own way of doing things and planning how they're going to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as a state, Do all these towns sometime actually get together and say, you know what, this is the way we're going to have our state running mm-hmm. as far as saving, I don't know, space or electricity or, you know, mm-hmm. having a major impact on our environment. Mm-hmm. Do they all connect and then they say something about it? Or it's just only each town goes and develops individually and God help us all? Mm-hmm. Is that how it goes or how does it go?
Well, it's actually a combination of both. I mean, each city and town has a lot of autonomy to do what it sees fit, and that's the way the United States is. You know, we like our government to be as local as possible and for the decisions to be made as local as possible. But each region of the state also has something called a council of governments that all cities and towns belong to, typically referred to as the COG. Here it's called TCOG, the Triangle Council of Governments. And this is a regional entity that brings all the cities together and towns together to work on common themes like water, energy, transportation. The big things that cross town borders and city borders and if aren't done well can hurt all of us. So they work to make sure that it's done well and that everyone's informed and try to get everyone on the same page, but they have no power. They're just an advisory body. They don't... In this state, there's no regional planning entity that has the power to make a decision. No city has ceded its decision-making authority to a regional entity. In fact, there are only a few regions in the whole country that do it. Portland, Oregon area does it. They have a metropolitan council that is a regional government that makes a lot of decisions on big pieces of infrastructure, transportation, water, sewer, those types of things, how to grow and when to grow. It's worked well for them, but I don't know if it would work well here. And I'm not advocating that, but I think we do need to have more interest and more support for regional and even mega-regional planning because, you know, the way we do it now, you know, Raleigh sort of, it controls up to the end of its border and then someone else takes over. And I think I saw it most clearly when Glenn Lang was mayor of Cary and instituted the slow growth. You know, Cary was growing so fast they couldn't really keep up, and he really wanted to slow growth down, and he did, but it's just like a balloon, right? When he squeezed in Cary, North Raleigh blew up, and all those people still came here and needed someplace to live, so they went to the area where the growth was allowed. And so without everyone working together, it just sort of pushes the issues around the table, and they really don't get solved. So I'm hopeful that the councils of government and the MPOs, which are the sort of transportation version of the Council of Government, a metropolitan planning organization, that they'll be able to get together, focus on three or four key major issues and really get some work done. I don't think you can focus on too many because it's too hard to bring all the communities together. You really need to focus on three or four of the big ones and work together to solve those issues, but there's nothing that requires it.
Can you point out as citizens a couple of concrete next steps that we should take to make this happen? You've got a glorious plan, which I support.
Good.
But how do we make it happen? What can I do mm-hmm. as a citizen to make it happen or to make, you know, a small part of it
sure.
happen?
Well, we're back to politics. You know, the way that decisions get made are, you know, they get made by our elected leaders. So I would say, you know, do what you're doing today. You know, show up at the discussions about planning and how we should grow. Voice your opinion as to what it is. And then vote for the person that you think is most aligned with your feelings about how we should grow. And ask the candidates questions. And if they're not supporting the type of growth that you want to see, vote for the other guy. Stay informed, be part of the process, because all of these, you know, Raleigh is great about one thing. It's great about a lot of things, but one thing it's really great at is involving everyone in the process. Every neighborhood plan, every corridor plan, every planning effort, Mitt Silver and the planning department, you know, they make a huge effort to go out and get as many folks involved as they possibly can. And that's where I think you can make the biggest differences. Come to those meetings, voice your opinion, you know, try to organize your neighbors in support of whatever it is that you're organized in. I mean, I've sat in literally hundreds of council meetings where, you know, everybody throws on a yellow shirt or a blue shirt or whatever shirt they decide that's for whatever issue they're supporting. And when they all come to a council meeting and the councilors look out and see, you know, 300 yellow shirts, that tends to influence the decision-making process. And, you know, luckily we live in a country where that can happen. And so that is what I would advise. And, you know, get informed and join. Volunteer to serve on a planning commission or a board or one of these entities that has some decision-making or advisory authority. That's the best way. And then the last way really is vote with your wallet. You know, if you think we need to be a more compact city, move to an area that's more compact and show the development community that there's a demand for it. Because if more people do that, then they'll respond by building the type of house you want to live in.
A lot of people talk about renewable energy, wind, solar, and whatnot. You did mention some products that are ongoing here in Raleigh, not to mention some hydro products as well. Yet at the same time, a lot of other folks discuss, well, we've got some issues with the grid. We have this power coming in, but our grid is, you know, I know in New York City or Washington, D.C., where I'm coming from, our grid is 150 years old. Have you and your colleagues discussed, I'm sure you have, but what concerns do you have about the grid and how once we start exploding in population and resources and so on, what sort of discussions have you had with your colleagues with regard to how we will improve the grid, sustain it so we can, in effect, sustain what we want to do here?
Yeah, I appreciate the question, and it's a big issue, only it's not my expertise. My understanding of the issue is right now the grid basically flows in one direction. It sends power to your house, but if you put solar panels on your roof, it's very difficult to send it back, you know, the other direction. There's all this discussion about meters running backward, and I've yet to see one do that. But I think the grid is, you hit a big issue that's a national issue, and I think takes national leadership, and I think the Congress and this administration is trying to provide some funds for updating our grid and making it smarter and more efficient and more reliable. I know Progress Energy has gotten a big grant, and I think Duke Energy has as well in this field to help create the so-called smart grid. And so, you know, one of our advantages, I think, frankly, is that Progress Energy is headquartered here. And, you know, they're a great company, and they want to do the right thing. And I think eventually, you know, having them headquartered here will allow that new technology to roll out, you know, hopefully in our market first. But, you know, it's definitely going to be a big issue, but I don't know much more about it. You stumped me. You know, that's not my expertise.
You just touched upon a word that was making me earlier doubt sort of the credibility of your predictions, and that's the economy. That, quote, nobody predicted the economy doing what it did. And what I seem to observe when I make my walks downtown is a lot of empty apartments and condos that maybe acted on some of those optimistic predictions of the future without new jobs coming into the center of Raleigh. So why should I be optimistic that some of the things you're saying earlier will actually occur?
You either grow or you die, right? So I think in this region we're well positioned to grow. In fact, I just read in the paper USA Today before I came here that Raleigh is one of the North Carolina as a state, and Raleigh in particular, is predicted to be one of the sort of regional economies that comes out of this malaise that we're in faster than any other. I mean, we have the things that all the growth people crave, right? We have the smart, educated population. We have three great research universities. We're not as congested as most people think. I mean, everybody here complains about congestion, but all you have to do is spend a couple days in Atlanta to realize it's not quite so bad as you think it is. So we have room to grow. We're still growth-friendly. I mean, we just talked about these projects that were approved in Raleigh, large projects with, you know, not a whole lot of debate. I mean, the Crabtree Tower was approved in two meetings. So compared to Arizona or California, we're still a growth-friendly state. And, you know, I think that the economy is going to come back here stronger than it will in other parts of the country and faster than it will, because we have all the ingredients that these new emerging companies and corporations are looking for. Yeah, there's no doubt that there's vacant apartments and vacant houses and vacant office space in our market right now. But my experience has been, you know, once we come out of this, those things will be absorbed faster than any new construction, because typically they're cheaper,
because they're already here and built, with old pricing. And so as those things fill up, it's just a matter of time before the next developer says, okay, vacancy is down to 5%. It's time to build new apartments or new houses or whatever it is. And as long as we're still growing and there's a demand, they'll do it. We're not one of the shrinking cities. And don't kid yourself. We could be. You know, if you ask people in 1950 what Detroit was going to be like in 2010, they'd have said it was going to be the transportation capital of the free world, and there was nothing that was going to change that. So if you don't continue to invest and make adjustments and make good investments in infrastructure and diversify your economy in a way that sort of takes the shock out of these big changes, you could easily end up like Detroit. So, folks that don't think that, planning and economic development matters, you don't have to look far, really, than cities like that or one of the big success stories was Pittsburgh, right? When the steel industry took a big dive, that city was basically dead and one of the most polluted cities in the U.S. And if you go up there now, it's a completely different city based on these same attributes that I just listed to you. Good education, smart people, low cost of living, and capacity still in the infrastructure. So, I'm not an economist. I'm an optimist, though, and I do think we can't stay down forever. I mean, just population growth in itself is going to drive some growth going forward.
What is the status of the Dorothea Dix property, and mm-hmm. how do you think that should be developed?
This is a good question. I'm not 100% sure where it is in terms of the state legislature and their decision-making process, but I know I just read recently that the last patients, I think, are moving out of the facility very soon, and it'll be mostly empty. I live only three houses. I live on Boylan Avenue, three houses from Dorothea Dix, and I take my dog over there a lot to run around and everything. So I know the campus pretty well. And I was a supporter of the idea of making it a regional park or even a destination park, not because of my own self-interest, but because I think it's one of those, once-in-a-lifetime opportunities. The problem I had is when I asked the Dix 306 committee, there's 1.3 million square feet of office built space up there. That's about the size of the Triangle Town Center Mall. Right, there's that much building up there, and when I ask those folks, what are you going to do with all these buildings that are already here, you get sort of this blank look, like we never thought about it. We just want to preserve the green space. And so I did some thinking on it. And is anybody here familiar with Chautauqua up in the north, right on the New York border, Lake Chautauqua? It's sort of a combination of a campus, a think tank, a recreational facility where people travel from all over the world. Each week in the summer is a different theme. One week it's international relations. The next week might be sustainability. The next week, human relations. And they have a golf course and basically everything that Dix has. And so what a great bridge, I thought, between sort of Centennial Campus, the sort of thought leader in science and technology, and downtown, sort of the cultural hub of the region, to bridge it with this idea of a new Chautauqua campus where people can come from all over the state and the world to address and discuss the major issues of our time and use those buildings up there for that purpose. So that was sort of what I was hoping it would become.
And with that, we bring the Science Cafe to a close. Thank you so much, Dan Douglas.
Thank you very much.